probably two things, maybe more, I don't know. We're going to define what a subobject classifier is in this topic of perceived. And then we're going to define the analog of a state. Okay, so the first is the subobject. By that I mean equivalent to the truth object. Yeah? So it's going to be an object which belongs to this topos. Therefore, first I'll write the definition, then I'll explain it properly. So it's going to be a presheaf such that on objects for each algebra, this guy here is the collection of sieves on that algebra. I mean, we already did that, but this definition will change a little bit because this is a poset. I mean, it'll simplify, actually. And on morphisms, so if you have an inclusion, let's call this I, then you have a corresponding map, which the standard definition is that you pick a sieve here, and then you map it to a sieve here in terms of your pullback. Now, because this category here is a poset, the concept of sieve actually simplifies a lot. And the reason is as follows. So, okay, the standard definition, let's pick, let's say, the principal sieve on some object. The definition was all those maps which had as a codomain A, and the condition was that given any other map, then the sieve was closed under left composition. So this guy belonged to the sieve as a standard, right? Yes. Okay, now in a poset, this guy is a poset. A poset is particular since given any two objects, you have two possibilities. So either there is a map between them, either one is the sub, in this case subalgebra, or the other way around, obviously. Or there is no map. So what this means is, for any two objects, there exists at most one map between them. So what this means is that this arrows here, which are actually inclusion, can be simply written in terms of subalgebras, in terms of the elements. So for example, if you want to define your principal sieve on B, then sure, you can all write all the inclusion maps such that blah, blah, blah. But because for each subalgebra is only one map, you can simply write this as follows. The same thing. And now you have to check this. There's this closed on the left composition. Well, you pick some other subalgebra by transitivity. So it is closed on the left composition. So it simplifies much more. I mean, instead of working with arrows, you're just going to work with sets. Really. So then now this guy here, you can simply write it. All those algebras. Awesome. kind of redundant, but I suppose you just need that. Okay, let's write it like this. That's better. Okay. So, and yeah, and this is obviously defined for each context. You get this collection of sieves and you define your maps. Now, there is two levels in this construction. You have two levels of hating algebras. So the first one is contextual, precisely this guy's. So for each context, this collection of sieves is a hating algebra. But these only represent local truth values. Since global truth values, as we've seen, is global sections. So these are kind of local hating algebras. And the standard, the definition of logical connectives, being this simply now a set of sieves, is easy to define. It's just set operations. So you have the AND is just section, the OR is union, and the relative pseudo complement. So what's the, all these are inside here, yeah? This would be. So this is defined. These guys here are in V. So you pick all those subsets of V such that if you go to all the other subsets, then this is satisfied. Then if you replace this by the empty sieve, you get your negation. And this now is again or the subalgebras and it's easy to show that these guys are sieves. And it's also easy to show, but that's an exercise, that this guy here is not a sieve. Hence this definition of negation. So that's at the level of local truth values and local hating algebras, kind of thing. Now the second level instead is the hating algebra formed by the collection of all global elements. This collection is denoted as follows symbolically. And this denotes all maps from your terminal object to to your sub-object classifier. The fact that this is a 18 algebra, you're going to have to show it as an exercise, but it's 18 algebra. And it really does depend on the fact that locally this is 18 algebra. Now, this global elements, which represents your truth values, there are two of them which are particularly important, I suppose. The first one, maybe A, is the global element such that for each context, it picks out the principal sieve for all of them. And this global section will be the analog of your classical true. Now it's easy to see that if this thing picks, say, for context V, then this guy here picks the principal sieve. Okay. Now you have a subcontext, and by definition of a global section, this has to undergo the Presheaf maps. So what this means is that you will have a map here. And this will map this section, which is, sorry, this sieve, to a sieve here, which is in terms of the pullback of this inclusion map. Now, a property of sieves is that if a sieve gets pulled back by an element of the sieve, which in this case it is, being a principal sieve, this guy is going to be a principal sieve on here. In fact, a better way of writing this is actually as follows, that because of how you define sieve, this is actually equal to this. Right? In particular, that's a really easy example. So what's that? So imagine you have a sieve and it's got V1, V2, V3, V4, some algebras. And these guys are subalgebras of each other. Then you want to map this on the sieves on V3. So then you would pick V1, V2, V3. We will give an example later on, but you basically pick all those algebra in the sieves, which are also subalgebras of V1. But we'll give a detailed example. Anyway, if you do that here, then because V1 is also subalgebra of V, you pick out the principal sieve. So what this means is that for all contexts related in this way, once you pick, if your global section picks the principal sieve on one of them, it will continue doing so. But the important thing of this section is that it will also pick principal sieves for contexts that are not related at all. So what I'm saying is that this particular cross-section would always pick out the maximal sieve, the value true. However, there are also sections which, for some contexts, they pick out value true, but for others don't. That's the way. And this one, there's a special case, and obviously there's only one of them, is the classical analog of truth. And obviously you have false. You have the section such that for all contexts, it will simply simply take out the empty thing. And obviously, for subcontext, empty sieve intersection for this is going to be empty. But then again, this will pick the empty sieve for everything. And in between, obviously, will be a lot of different sections which will pick out on a different sieves for different contexts. Okay, let's give an example. Okay, let's go again in our usual four-dimensional case. Now we'll consider various algebras. The first one is the usual maximum one. Now we want to consider sieves on this algebra. We want to consider this guy. So, okay, obviously you have the empty one. It will have the biggest sieve, that's the principal sieve. And then it will have a lot of other ones. I'll write some. I'll explain in a second the notation. I have S12, S13, S14, and so on. So what are these? So okay, so first of all, the principal sieve will be all those, well, subalgebras, all of them, okay? S1 will be defined in terms of the subalgebra V1 and all its subalgebras. So in this case, it's only V1. Am I following? So V1, I don't remember, sorry. Have any others about it, other than itself. So S3 would be V3. V3 and rest. V4. And so then S12 will contain V1, V2, but V12 is not this. Then you go to some smaller algebra. This guy, again, the empty one, the principal sieve that according to the notation would be S23, then it contains S2, S3, and then also contains S4 prime when you group this two and this two. So that's it. And so on and so forth. V2, for example, that just contains this guy and S2. Since you don't have any things more than V2. Okay, and how are the maps defined? So if you have a map between these two, which you do, being of algebra, then you have a map between the respective sieves. Set of sieves, which is defined in terms of this intersection. So the principal sieve is going to go to this guy here. So all those subalgebras, which are also subalgebra of this, and which are in the principal sieve. And this is just this. Then you pick S2. It's going to go to S2. You pick S1. M2. Since there are no subalgebra of this guy, which are contained also in this guy. Since here there's no, where is it? S1. S3 would go to S3. Is the notation clear? S3, 4, for example, would still go S3. Because this will contain V3, 4, V3, V4, and this contains V3, and so on. Oh, the empty set goes to empty set. And this is how you map your truth values, local truth values. So you can see that because it's a post set, things really simplify a lot. Because now your truth values are collections of subalgebras. Not any collection of subalgebras, but coarse-grained collections of subalgebras, which will be important when we actually evaluate propositions, because this coarse-graining will represent these approximations to truthfulness. Okay, so this is, for now, as much as I want to say about the truth object, we'll see how it works after we define what a state is. So now, what is a state? Okay, now I said various times that the way in which objects are defined in the topos formulation of quantum theory is by mimicking how they're defined in classical physics, how they're mathematically defined in classical physics. And the reason being that we want this mathematical construct to induce a more realist interpretation. And we did that for the state space. So in classical physics, the state space was defined such that physical quantities were maps from state space to reals. And again, in the topos formulation, we identify a state space such that that definition of physical quantity holds. Propositions in classical physics were identified with subset of the state space. In the topos, they were identified with Clopen subobject of the state space. So somehow we would like to define the state in analogy to classical physics. So in classical physics, I mean, it's very easy. A state is a point, really. And the kind of reason behind identifying the state with a point comes, I think it comes from measure theory, in the sense that a state is identified with the smallest subset of your state space, S, which has value 1 with respect to the Dirac delta measure. Oops. Oh, I should write it capital. Oops. Dirac delta. So how this thing works is like, in a sense, a characteristic function, right? A. So it gives value 1 if S is in A, and 0 if S does not belong to A. Obviously, the smallest set which gives value 1 is your singleton. Hence, states are points. This is all good. However, we have a small problem in the sense that I said that the Cauchy-Specker theory tells you that your state space doesn't have any points. So you have to somehow identify your state with something a bit more general than a point. And this you can do, and in theory you can also do it by defining a certain measure on the state space, but we don't have the tools to do that yet. We will do it later on, but for now we have to change slightly this definition to give it a kind of logical flavor, and then utilize that redefinition to define a state. So what I mean is the following. So this definition of a state can be given in a way that it requires just the notion, the set of notions of measures on your state space, which we haven't done yet. It requires all the notions of propositions on state space, which we have done. Right, so remember also in classical physics, right, a proposition was identified with a subset. All those states such that the proposition is true given that state. Now the smallest of the subset for which a proposition is true given a state S is again the singleton. Since the single S will always belong to a singleton. So you can in a way identify a state with a subset of your state space which is true given that state. So that's the kind of, and we know how to identify propositions in the Tobol's formulation of quantum theory. We know that propositions are subsets of your state space. So the idea is to somehow have a state and then identify this state with some subset, so with a proposition, so with a Clopen subobject. So. Of this guy, such that Clopen subobject, let's call it this for now, such that S, the proposition represented by S, is true given psi. Now I know I haven't defined any of the terms I'm writing here, but it's just to make you understand the kind of logic in order to identify states. So we cannot identify states with points, since the state space has no points. So you can't just simply say the state is this. You can't do it. So you have to identify something that is the closest you can get to a point. So something a bit more extended. And the way of doing that is by picking a subset of your state space, which are propositions, and which in a way is can be interpreted as true given that state, in a way to be defined yet. But it's a smaller subset of your state space which will represent the state. In the same way, this is the smaller subset of your state space which is true given S. As a kind of logic. Okay, I'll define what it is and it's going to be a bit more clear. So, how do we do this? Okay, that's it. Aim. Find smallest Clopen subobject of sigma, which I'm going to put like this, represents a state. And this will be the closest you can get to a point. Now, there are actually two ways of doing this. The first one, which we'll do today, is called a pseudo state option. This is good, but it can only deal with pure states. And in this, representation, your state will be an element. Only one. Where this means all the subsets of sigma. Then in order to account also for density matrices, you have to define something that's slightly more general, which I don't think we'll manage today. It's called the truth object. And in this case, a state will be an element of this. So this is the collection of all subobjects of sigma. This is the collection of all subobjects of the collection of all subobjects of sigma. So it's a little bit more general than this. So one subobject, the pseudo state, so pure states, something that involves more than one subobject will be the equivalent of a density matrix. Okay, so what is the pseudo state? I mean, it's actually quite easy, the pseudo state. So, okay, we have a state. Now we want to associate with it the smallest proposition, which is true given the state. We're still at standard quantum theory level. So what is that? Well, it's simply this. There's the smallest projection operator, which is going to project on this one-dimensional subspace. Okay, so now we have a projection operator. And we know that projection operators, which represent propositions, can be transformed into free sheaves through the process of Dersenization. So that's what you do. So you get for a state, just to say the smallest projection operator, which is true given the state, and you define the corresponding proposition in your topos. So for each context, you Dersenize this guy. So you pick the smallest projection operator in that context, which is implied by the original one. Now this can also be written as follows. Right. Since, and this doesn't go up, oops. Since trivially this holds, right? That's trivial. Now, since this is bigger,
should there be a less, a bigger than or equal to?
See, right. So this is trivial, and because this is bigger, then it follows that the expectation R is equal to 1 as well. So here you see that for each context, you pick the smallest proposition, which is true given your state. So that was the what I was talking about here. And you do that for each context, you Dersenize it. Then obviously that's you have to go to your state space. So for each context, you get the smallest, which is proposition, which is true given that state. And then you have to go at the level of the state space of the spectral perceive. So what you do is that then you associate. So here's your designized projection operator. Then you associate with it, if you remember, the subset of your state space, which gave value 1 now to this guy here. So you pick the level of the spectrum, the subset of the spectrum, which gives value 1, oops, to your dozenized projection operator, and so on and so forth. Right? So it's again, it's exactly like the proposition, but now you're picking the smallest proposition you can think of, which is associated to the state. So in this sense, what you get is actually the smallest Clopen subobject that you can define. So here again is this guy. I'm not sure why I'm drawing this, but then you dozenize it for this guy. And then you pick your subset here and so on. And the Presheaf maps are simply the same as the Presheaf map of your state space. And exactly what you did for propositions, this ends up with a well-defined Presheaf, which now I'll give the formal definition. Oh, the important point is that you really are trying to minimize your proposition, which is true given that state. And this is the closest you can get to a point in your state space. So by dozenizing and then taking the respective subset there, you end up with a well-defined Presheaf, which is the pseudo-state Presheaf. Oh, I forgot to say one thing, which you're going to have to show. I'm not going to show it, but this is injective, right? Which is actually important, otherwise this would be totally useless. So that for each state, there is one unique to the state. This is one of the, which is good, right? So what is this? So it's a Presheaf. Such that objects, so for each V, you first dozenize this guy. And then you get respective subset of the spectrum. Morphism. So V prime to that inclusion, yeah? You get respective maps that going the other way, which are exactly the ones of your state space. So for each element in here, you're simply restricted now to act on the smaller algebra. And this is all well defined because of the dozenization property. So basically, because of this. So if it gives value 1 to this guy, it's going to give value 1 to something bigger. And this is your state. Okay, although it is the same as proposition, I'll just quickly write an example. So kind of drilling it into it. I mean, it is obvious, right? From the definition. That's not actually important. Okay, let's try an example. Oh, there's always a few four-dimensional case. And this is okay, is easy. So let's consider this guy. This is simply 0, 1. And you do like we did for propositions. You go to your algebras. And it doesn't eyes. So in this case, it's just itself. Let's go to something different. Let's do 2, no, 1, 4. This is B1, B4, B2. And here, something more general. And now you see that, okay, it's true given that, and then this is going to be 1. And so on. So what you do is for each context, you pick the smallest proposition, which gives expectation value 1 with respect to that state. You do that for context, you put all the information together, and that's your analog of your state. And it's the closest you can get to a point, since this is the smallest projection operator.
Is this what we're taking as an isolation?
Yeah.
Just because of this?
Yeah, because
if we were to take another topos for doing something else, would we have to define another nationalization.
Another topos meaning your category or
yeah. I only have these topos in mind, so
you probably would have, as it depends on what topos you use. Like if you used the category of self-adjoint operators, probably you have an equivalent. But if you use a totally different topos, you would have to redefine nationalization. I mean, this definition of designization is specific to this topos.
So the inner one doesn't have any role?
It will have when we define self-adjoint operators. Because in that case, you will have to approximate your operator both directions. And also when we'll define the analog of the real numbers, when we'll define that, this will be used to give values, and the values are normally an interval. And this interval will be governed by outer and inner representation.
So here the inner is already taken care of because it's a project.
Okay, and the maps are just the same as for propositions, right? As far as I remember. Okay, so we've got some time. I'm going to start. I'm not going to define truth values, but that's not enough. I'm going to start conceptually trying to define how you would go about to define truth values. Now we've seen what truth values are. I deleted it, but the SIBs, global elements. We've seen what propositions are, which are coefficients of objects or state space, and we've seen what states are, which again are the smallest subobjects of state space. So given all this, now you can actually define the truth value of a proposition given a state. And again, we're going to get inspiration from classical physics. So in classical physics, again, your proposition was a subset of your state space. And given a set, a state, you say that this proposition is true given the state. So this guy here is true given S if S belongs to the subset of your state space for which that proposition is true. Now, if you, instead of just considering a point, you define a singleton, I can actually identify truthfulness in terms of an inclusion relation. So, the value of a proposition given a state is defined in terms of an inclusion relation, and here you get 0 for 1 for true or false. So what we want to do is to mimic the way in which truth values are defined in terms of inclusion relations. That's what we want to do. And this makes sense since we've seen that both states and propositions are actually sub-objects of a state space. So somehow you can compare them. I want to compare them in a way that there is an inclusion relation. So let's first go for each context. We have, and we consider this state and some proposition. For each context, you have this guy, and you have this guy here. Now, this one is the smallest projection operator, which is true given the state. Now, for this to be true, it has to be bigger, has to be implied at the level of projection operators. So this gives value 1, and this is bigger than this thing here. That's what I said before, really. It's going to give you 1. So the level of projections, you say that this proposition is true. Sorry, this proposition is true given the state if this implication relation because of this. Maybe it's a bit of abuse of notation because here was still projection, but this projection really represents your state. Okay, this is at the level of projections. What about at the level of your local state spaces? So this guy will give you this subset. So all those elements which give value 1 to this thing here. This guy here will give you another subset. Give all those elements which give value 1 to this bigger projection operator. Now, if this guy belongs to here, let's call S prime, then again, because of this relation, because this can either have 0 or 1, then this will belong to here. So this relation at the level of projection operators translates in a relation at the level of subset of your state space of inclusion. So this is going to be and again, what this is kind of telling you is that this proposition is true given the state. And if you do it for all contexts, then you arrive precisely at that. You arrive at a way of checking if a proposition is true given a state in terms of mathematical operation of inclusion of subobjects. So eventually, the truth value of a proposition given a, given a state is defined in terms of an inclusion relation, which for each context, you first designize it and then get the respective subobjects of your state space. Now, how this will be defined, we'll do it next time. But again, this will have, this is your local, but this will be given in terms of, this is a global. And this will be given in terms of your local truth values. And for each context V, this quantity here, once you calculate it, will be a sieve. There will be a collection of subalgebras which have a certain effect, and the effect is to generalize your proposition to the point that it is actually true classically with respect to the state. But we'll do that next time. But the importance now is that this relation of inclusion is how you define truth values. Yeah, I think we'll next go to
the next. Are there any other ways to rephrase the classical truthfulness of that?
Other inclusion?
Like you take parts of, I mean, like you have the element inclusion, I mean, the element.
Mm-hmm.
They belong to a set, and then the one set being part of another set, you can take parts of that belonging to parts of, I mean, when you lose information.
No questions.
I mean, you have that an element belongs to a set, uh-huh. And then you have that a set is a subobject of another set.
Uh-huh.
And you could take
or more general.
That part of this is a subobject of parts of the right hand side. So, I
mean, oh, so you generalize.
It looks like you're not doing anything, and yet you have two different descriptions when you go to the topos.
No, this is to identify.
Of course.
Oh,
can you have another identity which gives rise to another way of.
Oh, I see. I don't know.
Because it looks trivial in the classical part, and then when you rewrite things, it looks quite different, I guess.
You're saying if in the topos is some other way of writing this other than inclusion. Ooh la la. Maybe if you redefined what these things are. I mean, there will be another way when you change this guy. I mean, this is one pseudo state. Then you can use a different type of states, and then you will not use this inclusion. What does it correspond to classically? Classically is the same thing, because then in that case you would get a collection of this guy and say that S belongs to a collection of it. So with this definition of state and this definition of proposition, I'm not sure if you could define it in any other way.
I mean, how do you know when you're done? When you have reached the way you want to write things down. I mean, this has to be the proposition of
a statement in the topos.
Yeah.
And so, I could write it any other way, but this has all the properties that I want. What are those properties?
The fact that you can define the truth values as a sieve. So, I mean, this, by defining your proposition like this and your state space, and your state, then this inclusion will actually enable you to evaluate it. I mean, if you go here, I wouldn't quite know how, what else to do other than implication relation. So the fact that you do define it for all context in terms of this projection operators kind of forces you to have an inclusion relation. I mean, belonging relation wouldn't make sense at this point because those are two sub-objects. You can have a belonging relation if you redefine one of these two.
Now my worry is that you have two descriptions for the same thing and one doesn't quite work, I guess. The pseudo-state one.
Oh, right, no, but that's just, if this works simply because of how you define this, like this, which you can only do it for pure states. Now, once you define density matrices, you have a generalized version of this, which reduces to this when you have pure states.
So you actually have one
definition, which is generalized.
Si, si. Okay. I thought you had many choices and you didn't know how to.
Oh, okay. See, no, so I didn't understand. No. They're equivalent when the pure state, the pseudo state, and this, and the truth object, they're the same when it's a pure state. It's like the same if you have a density matrix and it reduces for this.
Okay. Okay, I didn't quite understand.
But we'll do that next time, so you'll see how it's exactly the same if you consider pure states.